Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, February 9th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
So Philadelphia is bracing for one of the biggest school shakeups in more than a decade. The School District of Philadelphia has released a $2.8 billion facilities plan that would close 20 schools starting in the 2027-28 school year, co-locate six others, and modernize more than 150 buildings across the city. Now, this is not surprising because district leaders say it is necessary. Enrollment is down. Thousands of seats sit empty, and too many children are learning in buildings with serious infrastructure problems. So today, we're going to talk to Superintendent Tony Watlington for a full hour and give him an opportunity to explain his plan and to take your questions. There's been a lot of pushback recently from parents and teachers and others and communities.
And city council.
And city council.
We'll get to that.
Well, we'll talk about the politics of all of that. And we also want to hear from you. What is your reaction to Philly's school closure plan? Do you have questions for the school superintendent? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, please share the video and also leave your comments in the chat. By the way, we do have a parent that we have scheduled to be on the call.
And hopefully others.
And hopefully others and teachers and folks impacted will call in.
888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. But first, a trio of other local news stories, starting with one that's kind of adjacent to the show today, as you heard. We'll be talking about the school district's new facilities master plan on the show today. Ultimately, the decision to approve or reject that plan lies with the school board, whose members are appointed by the mayor.
Yep.
But would Philadelphia City Council try to apply pressure to impact the outcome? Well, that seems to be on the table. Now, City Council sends about $300 million in discretionary funding to the school district on an annual basis. And City Council President, this is interesting, Kenyatta Johnson, told the Inquirer he would consider holding up some of that money, quote, if need be. The background here, lots of City Council members have concerns about the plan. Not surprisingly, they tend to be centered around school proposals in their districts, school closures in their districts. There's been lots of chatter. But this idea that the city council would take kind of the nuclear option here and withhold money over a process where they have no direct control is eyebrow raising.
Yeah, definitely raises some eyebrows. I mean, city money represents about 40% of the district's budget, so they really can't do very much without city approval and the
council. But just to clarify on that, a lot of that is formulaic. It goes through a property tax. It's automatic through property taxes. So now, theoretically, they could futz with that as well, but that would be far more complicated. There's another pot of money that's purely discretionary.
Yeah.
They just add it on top. We'll give you an extra $285 million.
And they need that money.
They need it, yes.
But all of this tension is going to become really clear next week when City Council holds a public hearing on the district proposed plan. That is set for February 17th. It'll be then when we hear from those council members.
Yeah.
And we've already started hearing some of the arguments percolating.
Yeah.
Council member Lozada, who represents Kensington, where there are schools on the list for closure, has been very vocal. So has council member Cindy Bass. There's been a lot of pushback with Lankenau High School being on the closure list.
Yep.
So we'll probably hear from them. And I'm looking forward to hearing Mr. Watlington today. You know, his plans for the politics. He had to know. He's been here for a few years at this point. So he had to know that this was going to be a political issue.
Certainly.
So we're going to talk to him about those plans.
And for folks listening who don't live in Philadelphia, might be a little bit confused because in almost every other school district across the state of Pennsylvania, there's a school board that's elected by voters. Not the case in Philadelphia. Never been the case here in Philadelphia. We have unusual school governance here, which creates some of these tensions between the funder, city council, and the governor, which is the school board. So just putting that context behind all of this.
Yeah. Second story.
Go ahead now.
Half a million people are expected to flock to Philly during the World Cup.
Ooh.
So nightlife boosters want to capitalize on every dollar, and they are now pushing to keep bars, restaurants, and clubs open past the city's 2 a.m. curfew.
Ooh.
pretty cool write-up by Philly Voice there. Philadelphia is hosting 6 matches at the Link, if you didn't know, including one on the 4th of July. And the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau estimates that about 1 million international travelers will be in town over the course of the year to celebrate the 250th. And so the bar and restaurant industry say this is a great opportunity. And, you know, other cities that are hosting World Cup matches are doing this as well. New York and Miami, they offer bottle service until 4 a.m. Kansas City, which is also hosting 6 matches. Missouri lawmakers recently passed a bill that would allow bars and restaurants to stay open 23 hours a day.
What's the 1 hour they're closed?
Which one? I don't know.
Pick one,
well,
I guess.
Up to 23. And so, but the problem is we don't have a great track record.
You're at 23, man. Just go to 24,
just
by
go
the way.
24 hours a day bar.
I don't want to tell you how to run your city, Kansas City, but just go 24 at that point.
But there, but you know, in Pennsylvania, we don't have a great track record. They tried to do it during the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, 2016.
But lawmakers passed it at the last minute. There was only about a couple weeks. The law was very narrow, and only about 30 bars participated in the loosening of the curfew 10 years ago. And most of those were hotels. And a lot of the smaller bars got denied. And so they're hoping that this time they do it a little bit differently so that more bars can take part and make the money when all these people flood Philly.
Here are the countries, by the way, that we know will be playing matches in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast.
Okay.
Ecuador, Brazil, Haiti, France, Curacao, Croatia, Ghana, and there's going to be a couple others we don't know yet. Of those countries, who do you think's partying, you know, past 2 a.m.? I got my eye on Croatia.
Croatia,
small
really?
Small but mighty. I think 3 a.m., 4 a.m., the Croats are still out there, well, throwing a couple back.
And then, you know, they want it to happen the entire time that the World Cup is happening because the matches are all different times of the day.
Right.
And so you could go to a bar with your friends at 2 a.m. and watch a game across the world, right?
So, I am so fascinated to, like, just see people from all over the world descend on Philadelphia and, you know, see them in these revelatory moments. I'm excited to meet people from all these countries, by the way.
I have no idea who I would be rooting for, but I'm going to root for somebody.
I'm rooting for Curacao. That's got to be the smallest country there. You got to go for the underdog.
How many people
live in Curacao?
I have no idea.
Let me Google that real quick. Curacao population, 155,000 people.
That's it. So you got to root for them. You
got
to get a T-shirt or something. I remember going to a World Cup party in Northern Liberties one time at the Piazza out there. And it was tons
great
of fun.
Scene.
A lot of
great
fun.
Scene.
Yeah.
It's going to be like that times 20.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right.
So.
Some good news.
Mm-hmm.
The saga of the Philadelphia ice car is
over. And you know what he's talking about.
And it has a happy ending. So
good.
If you missed this earlier, Philadelphia teacher Tiana Graham parked her car in Fishtown recently. She returned to find it completely encased in ice.
Poor thing.
It's possible the cause of this was a nearby water main leak. It could have been water dripping from a highway overpass. Either way, some water combined with cold weather turned her car into a straight up popsicle.
Yep.
Pictures of the car went viral. It became a feature on Google Maps. Not making that up. And the car was ruined.
Yeah.
Here's the good news. The used car company Carvana stepped in. They have gifted Graham a 2022 Honda Civic. So now she's got a new car. No ice on the car. And she's good to go.
Yay. And because ice had clogged her tailpipe, totaling her car. And it was so sad. And it's nice. And she's a teacher. She gets the win here.
Go teacher.
Yay.
And we're talking about teachers in schools today. So we're happy for her. Now, in addition to this Philadelphia ice car, there is a South Jersey ice truck. Some idiot drove onto a frozen pond in Ocean County and started doing donuts.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ice cracked and the truck sank. And now the truck is iced over and still stuck in the middle of the pond. Thank God the driver's okay, but he is being charged with several crimes. No word on whether the show Jackass will replace his car.
Yes. By the way, this one made me mad because, first of all, the driver was in his 40s, 44 to be exact, according to the reporting. So he was grown and knew better. Second, he didn't report that his car or his truck had sunk. So first responders
they were freaked out.
Actually, you know, went out to the site, thought someone could be inside frozen and, you know, and so you risk lives doing a prank like this and not reporting it.
Yeah. By the way, no reaction to my Jackass joke. Just let that one go right over.
I apologize.
Yeah. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. Good co-hosting.
I apologize. I was still mad at this guy. I was mad at him.
I do think the weather is slowly or maybe quickly driving all of us insane, or maybe just me. But the South Jersey ice truck is evidence of a society that seems to be collapsing from the inside.
Yeah. It's collapsing.
Like, we don't know what to do. It's too cold. It's been too cold for too long. We're doing donuts on ice ponds. Like, we're losing it, man. I'm losing it.
And that, by the way, that little area of ice, I was looking
at flights to Miami.
We need to get out of here.
I don't know what to do.
It's too much.
You know what we're going to do today? We're going to distract ourselves with a really important conversation about Philadelphia's facilities plan, which could result in 20 schools closing. We'll have the superintendent in on the other side of this break. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. The Philadelphia School District released its $2.8 billion facilities master plan last month. It calls for closing 20 city schools beginning in the 2027-28 calendar year, a move that would displace roughly 5,000 students.
The district has said the closures are needed because of declining enrollment. There are around 70,000 empty seats, as well as because of the poor condition of the buildings. The plan calls for improvements to many of the 159 remaining schools, such as updated curriculum and programs, air conditioning, and improved recreational spaces.
But while the district has promised that relocated students will be placed in schools with equal or better academic outcomes, many families worry about the stress from changing schools, including longer commute times, safety issues, and overcrowding. So what will the new district facilities plan mean for students, families, staff, and neighborhoods? And how are communities responding?
Today, we've invited Philadelphia School District Superintendent Tony Watlington here to join us to talk about the new plan, explain the thinking behind the closures, and how the district is addressing the families impacted. Superintendent Watlington, welcome to Studio 2.
Well, good morning, Cherry and Avi. Good to be with you today.
Nice to have you.
And of course, nice to have our audience with us as well. Mm-hmm. We want to hear from you this hour. Our question is, what's your reaction to Philly's school closure plan? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
We already have callers on the line, but before we get to them, we wanted to sort of start by giving you the floor, Superintendent Watlington, and to talk about the why behind this plan, but also specifically the why now.
Well, again, I'm excited to be here to talk with you this morning about this $2.8 billion master facilities plan for the School District of Philadelphia. You know, in the nation's sixth largest city, this is the problem we're solving for. The problem we're solving for in this facilities master plan is how do we best use our limited resources, our budgets, our time, and our buildings to push in more high-quality academic and extracurricular programs across every neighborhood, across every zip code in Philadelphia, so that we can accelerate student achievement. Why now? Over the past 3.5 years, our test scores have increased. We've made progress in 10 out of 12 goal areas under the board's goals and guardrails. We have seen significant improvement in the graduation, four-year cohort graduation rate, and our dropout rate has been cut by more than half. So we've got the wind kind of underneath us, beneath our wings. We're making some progress, but it's not near enough. In the nation's second biggest poor city, we know that if we significantly improve the education that our young people get and they graduate college and or career ready, it absolutely downstream has an impact on the economy here. When you hear our mayor talk about the safest, cleanest, greenest mm-hmm. big city with access to economic opportunities for all. This is about that access to economic opportunities for all because we want to significantly improve the academic experience for our children and young people. In tandem with that, in addition to that, it's no surprise to anyone who's lived in Philadelphia any amount of time that we have some schools that are significantly over-enrolled. And we've got a number of schools that are under-enrolled. In an ideal world, I'd never like to recommend any kind of school closure. But I do believe that when we think about the 159 campuses that will get modernized under this $2.8 billion 10-year plan and the other improvements that will take place in the school district, I think we're on the right track. We are taking the time to listen to a lot of community feedback. Mm-hmm. And that's why we put this plan out 5 weeks ahead of taking these any formal recommendations to President Reginald Streeter and the school board on February 26th.
So behind all of this is a long-term mm-hmm. enrollment decline. You wouldn't say the last 10 years has been the sharpest enrollment decline, but still a decline nonetheless in enrollment in district schools. What do you believe is the cause of that decline?
Well, certainly in Philadelphia, there was a time where nearly well over 200,000 students went to school in district-operated schools mm-hmm. and district-operated school buildings. My mentor, the late Dr. Constance E. Clayton, told me all about it. In a time when she was superintendent here, and this was at that time the fourth largest school district in the nation, over time, there's been a growth in charter schools. In fact, 60% of our nearly 200,000 public school children attend schools in district-operated schools.
Yep.
40% of our public school children that the Board of Education has some responsibility for are in charter schools. A small number of charter schools are actually in district-operated buildings,
right.
But the lion's share are not. That's been one phenomenon. Number two, the birth rate is not growing nationally or state and locally. And then third, the traditional public school district is not the only game in town. Mm-hmm. There are home schools, private parochial schools. There's a lot of choices. And that's why I'm so focused, and this team is so focused on improving graduation rates, test scores, mm-hmm. and dropout rates. Because we have a vision for growing the enrollment in this district yeah. again.
But with that vision, and I understand the long-term vision, but in the short term, I think a lot of parents will see headlines like district closing, consolidating, moving students, and think, yeah, I'd like to choose a different option. I'd like to choose mm-hmm. An option that feels a little less chaotic to me. Aren't you not worried about sort of the losing people in the process of trying to scale down some of these underused facilities?
Yes, we are laser focused on doing everything we can to not contribute to more out-migration of students yeah. in the School District of Philadelphia. By the way, last year, for the first time in a decade, we turned around declining enrollments yeah. in the school district.
Right.
The district grew by 1,841 students. And I strongly believe that we would have been on a trajectory this year to increase enrollment again, except for the first 3 weeks of school when there was an interruption in public transportation with the SEPTA system. Mm-hmm. And when you think about 52,000 public school children rely on public transportation to get to school. That said, we will staff up a transition office where we will appoint staff internal to the district that will report out of the superintendent's office. And this staff and its leader will wrap their arms around any families that are displaced
yeah.
and provide one-stop shop support and services that ranges on one end from social and emotional and mental health wellness and supports to the other end of transportation, helping to ensure that children's academic performance goes up and not down, and that their daily attendance goes up and not down, because that did not occur in 2012-13, according to the research.
And we have a caller I want to bring in just a moment, but I wanted to ask you, what lessons, I know you were not here in 2013 when the city had to manage, you know, the closures of schools, and it was very traumatic, but you know, from what you've learned about that process, what do you see are the main, I guess, goals and things that will be different in this transition as you manage closures?
One lesson that we've learned as we've studied two pieces of research. We've read the research put out by the University of Pennsylvania and Research for Action, and we've done a lot of talking to people researching this city who told us that, number one, we need to be very transparent Now, mm-hmm. remember, in 2012-13, the previous board and superintendent, Dr. Bill Height, were facing a $1.2 billion deficit.
Right. It was a financial crisis. They,
and this is not.
And they had to move really fast. Because of some good work that's happened over time, we're in a different space. We don't have that $1.2 billion deficit. We've got a $300 million structural deficit and a way to pay it down. But be transparent. People said, listen, don't surprise us. It's no secret. We know we have under and over enrolled schools. Mm-hmm. If there are going to be some changes, talk to us, shoot us straight, give us time to react to it, and do that in a way that we don't learn about this on air from Cherry and Avi.
Sure.
Yeah.
Number two, we were told, think about the impact on communities where schools have always been the center of the public square, anchors of a community. Think about it from the perspective of a parent, and we've done our level best to do that. And then third, once there are some recommendations on the table, make sure that there's ample time and processes before you go to the Board of Education, before the board considers action, so that we can be heard and we can be assured mm-hmm. that you heard our voices. And we're doing all three of those.
All right. Let's bring in a caller. We have Nella from Northwest Philly. She is a student from Lankenau High School. We figure we start with a student caller. Nella, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Good afternoon. I have a question for Dr. Wallington. My question is, so sorry. I also want to introduce myself as well. I do come from Lankenau Environmental High School. I'm a senior, and I did want to know, why shut down Lankenau, or why possibly, think about shutting down Lankenau, because we provide many opportunities for our students. We even have CTE programs for our students. We're, one of the only schools in the state and city that provides this program for our students. So what I would like to say is, in January 2024, Mayor Sherelle Parker released her 100-day action plan, in that she shared her vision for a, in quote, a safer, cleaner, and greener Philadelphia. Do you think that recommend the states and cities only environmental school for closure aligns with her vision for a cleaner, safer, greener Philadelphia?
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that call.
Yes.
So Lankenau High School, we should clarify, is one of the schools mm-hmm. on the closure list. Maybe you could talk specifically about why the decision was made around Lankenau. There's been a lot of pushback around that specific school. And I guess in answering that, maybe talk us a little bit more through how you are making these decisions.
Absolutely. First, I want to thank this very fine student for mm-hmm. That question. I thought it was asked quite well. And it reminds me of a visit I took to Lankenau mm-hmm. Environmental School with President Bendapudi from Penn State.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Senator Vincent Hughes and some other folks. And we got to see students hands-on work around some environmental issues and some great presentations. Look, there are no perfect decisions when we have a district with such high levels of under-enrollment in some areas. There are no perfect recommendations in a district where, when we have a cold snap like we're experiencing today mm-hmm. in the past week, mm-hmm. and at midnight or 2 a.m. in the morning, the boilers don't fire in some of our buildings and the HVAC mm-hmm. system shut down and we get bursting pipes. We get bursting pipes like we had at Dobbins High School a few days ago. And we've got to figure out how to tackle all those challenges. Why did we, in these set of recommendations, pick some schools and not others? We gave a survey and a couple of surveys, and we had record participation rates. And the public in Philadelphia, to the tune of 8,000 Philadelphians, told us there are four major themes they want these recommendations to center around. And one of the recommendations, one of the themes that we heard strongly, to the tune of 70% or higher, mm-hmm. and these survey responses came from every single mm-hmm. zip code in Philadelphia. That is really significant. One of the themes is that we ought to figure out how to reinvest in neighborhood high schools.
Because I think in this case, and Lincoln is near Roxborough, which is another school that's under-enrolled, right? And I think the one potential way to go about this is to say, look, Roxborough is a struggling school. Why don't we shift them over to Lincoln now, which seems to have had some more recent success. Now, that's all relative, right? And it's all qualitative. But that's something I've seen out there. And so you're saying that you'd rather reinvigorate a Roxborough high school if it means moving Lincoln as a program into a school like Roxborough. Is that right?
And I'll let you answer that. No, you have a follow-up to that because Lincoln is an unusual school. They have a farm.
Yes.
They have a large campus, something that is not necessarily, you can't duplicate at Roxborough. So I just, I add that to what Avi's question here as you walk through the rationale for that one.
I would say it's my understanding that at one time Lincoln was co-located came out of one of the traditional high schools, I believe Roxborough, as it were. Perhaps during the tenure of Paul Vallis, the former CEO here in the school district. So we've done a quite a bit of historical dive into how we got to where we are today. I would imagine if the reverse decision or recommendation had been put on the table, we'd be hearing a similar appropriate concern among Roxborough.
So, but is the bottom line there? Look, we're talking about Northwest Philadelphia for folks that don't know that at the end of the day, you can't have two schools. So you essentially you have to have one school building with multiple programs. That's the sort of the rationale there.
We do need to have some economies of scale. We've got to tackle this problem. And one of the things I want to do is I think this is a once in a lifetime opportunity for Philadelphia. I want to be crystal clear. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity for the city of Philadelphia, the nation's sixth largest city. We can either tinker around the edges or we can be forward thinking and think about how do we significantly improve overall access to high quality academic and extracurricular programming such that all neighborhoods, all zip codes have high quality academics. At the end of the day, this plan, and I'm not saying this is a perfect recommendation. I'm very sensitive to the thinking about Lincoln Hall. Heard a lot of concern about Conwell, Middle, and some other.
Which is in Kensington.
In Kensington. And I think all the feedback is absolutely spot on and legitimate. But at the end of the day, downstream, if we make the hard decisions now, this school district will double the access of pre-K opportunities for young people. Mm-hmm. Number two, we'll move from about half of our middle grades offering algebra, which is a gateway, a requirement to get into some of the coveted criteria-based schools. We'll increase it from about 53% to 100%. And we'll have more high-quality arts, music, physical education.
Yeah.
We'll have less buildings breaking down in the middle of the night.
And I know kind of that thing. People would not argue with you that some of these buildings needed to be closed down. Mm-hmm. And I guess the question that I have is there wiggle room? I mean, you put out this plan.
Sure.
You've invited feedback. You've given people 5 weeks before you take it to, you know, the board. Is there wiggle room? Could some things
Absolutely.
Change? Or is this sort of, in your mind, this is what it is?
I would say categorically, absolutely, yes. There's always room for wiggle room. And think about this. This is the city that produced the big plan for the United States of America around 1789. It was called the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I checked, it's been changed about 30 times.
So you're saying you're open to change. This is not this is not, you know, in stone, that you will be seriously considering the feedback you get from parents, teachers, and students.
I am saying quite clearly this 5 week runway for feedback is not optics. It's not school district theater. We are listening. I am watching the recorded sessions from all 40 sessions that are occurring across the city. Now, I don't go to all the in-person sessions because I don't want to pick one school community to suggest that I value one over the other. But I'm going to personally lead three community town hall meetings that will be publicized a little bit later this week over the next couple of weeks. And I'll be there to stand eyeball to eyeball and look at people and hear their feedback directly. Yes, this is not token feedback. We are listening. And if we miss something, Mm-hmm. If there's something that makes sense, we're going to take a look at it.
And speaking of feedback, I want to bring in a parent now. This is Sierra. Mm-hmm. I'm told she's the mother of Aiden, who's a fifth grader at James Ludlow School in Lower North Philadelphia. Sierra, welcome to Studio 2. Thank you so much for your time today. I'm just curious. This Ludlow School is one of the schools that could close under this plan, and I'm curious for your reaction to that.
Yes. First off, good afternoon. My immediate reaction was hurt and feeling for the community, because my son has been through the school district and has gone through four different schools before we moved to Philadelphia and we lived in Jersey. And Ludlow was the only school where I felt like my son was heard and he was able to progress in every areas within school, academically, socially, and emotionally. It's a school where he feels at home, where he knows and I know that he's taken care of the minute he walks through the door, even before he walks through the door, the crossing guard. And so when I found out about this, you know, I reached out to the school, other parents, and wanted to see what was, you know, the changes that are going to happen. Granted, my son is in fifth grade, you know, next year he's going to be in sixth grade, then he'll be moving on to middle school. But I worry about the future kids that are in our neighborhood and how they're going to be able to have, you know, accessibility to a great school that Ludlow is.
Yeah. What are the major concerns that sort of came to your mind when you heard that the school that has supported your sons in such a great way was on the list of schools to be closed?
Honestly, I really like at Ludlow the smaller class sizes. I like the individual services that they do provide for my son, as well as, you know, the proximity to the new school, how the kids are going to get there, the traveling time to getting there, the busing, and if that's even going to be offered.
Yeah.
So with him going into a bigger school, of how he would react to that, and just being able to make sure that he doesn't regress.
Yeah.
Because before my son, he was in special education. Since being at level for third grade, he's now jumped up to general education. And that's through the support at Ludlow.
Yeah. And just for folks who haven't read through the plan calls for closing James R. Ludlow School and reassigning students to Paul L. Dunbar School, Spring Garden School, and General Philip Kearney School. Just curious, you talked a lot there, Sierra, about accessibility. In terms of just getting to school, if your son was reassigned to one of those three schools, what would the plan entail? Walking, driving, bus? I mean, give me a sense of how you might try to navigate that if indeed you had to.
Honestly, with his age, it would either have to be me walking him in the morning or him walking with other students or taking public transportation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I see you. I'm going to have Mr. Watlington respond to you. I don't know if you have any thoughts about what Sierra has to say, some of the fears she's expressing about this change.
First, I want to say thank you for the question and the feedback. We absolutely are listening. And in the context of Ludlow and some of the other schools, I just want to note that you mentioned class size. This plan is not intended to increase class sizes in the aggregate. In fact, we're confident we'll continue to work within the guidelines of the collective bargaining agreement with the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers.
Right.
Second, there
might be more classes within a building, more classrooms that are filled, but you're saying the plan here is that the number of students per class will not change.
On the aggregate, we don't expect that to go up. That's correct.
Okay.
With transportation, one of the responsibilities of our transition office that will report out of my office is to provide a one-stop shop. Remember, we've designed this set of recommendations for there to be no impacts in the next school year 26-27, so that we can plan and execute well to make sure that we've attended to every concern, need, or issue to include transportation. And then finally, You mentioned earlier, Avi, that 100% of the children would go to schools if these recommendations were to be adopted in their current state. 100% would go to schools with attendance that was as good or better. Let me go a little bit deeper than that. 90% of the 5,000 young people you referenced will actually be in a position to go to a school that has better performance in either English language arts and or math. that significant.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank Sierra
for joining us today
on Studio
thank
2.
You.
We are coming up on a break, and you're listening to, just heard there from Dr. Tony Watlington, mm-hmm. superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. We see many of you on the line, and we're
going to
try to get
you.
To your questions
yes.
as soon as we can. We do have to take a break right now. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And we are getting your reactions to the recently released Facilities Master Plan by the School District of Philadelphia.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Today we're unpacking the School District of Philadelphia's plan to close 20 schools because of declining enrollment and deteriorating buildings. And with us to talk about the proposal and the backlash, it is Philadelphia School Superintendent Tony Watlington.
And we want to hear from you. What's your reaction to Philly's school closure plan and broader facilities plan? What questions do you have for the superintendent? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat. Let's bring in another caller.
Yeah.
This is Renee on line yep. 7, who I believe is from Blankenburg Elementary. And Blankenburg's, if I have my geography right, in West Philadelphia. And again, one of the schools on the potential mm-hmm. closure list. Renee, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I'm calling in as someone that attended the local, the community meeting on Saturday for us. We have our virtual one this evening. And I would like to ask Superintendent Watlington what the algorithm was that was actually used to decide these factors. I see that factors have continually been listed out and scores given, but there's no clear algorithm, nor is our information correct with our scores around our community. Around our community partners, for example, we had more than a decade-long relationship with Spiral Q that was not included in our score, as well as our increasing test scores, as well as my confusion with our low social vulnerability score, then requiring that our students walk a mile and a half to three different schools through other unsafe communities where they don't have the protection of their neighbors. So I'm a little confused by both the algorithm mm-hmm. and then how y'all plan to fix and then reintroduce the data to the public that's more accurate for each of these schools that have been told to close.
Thank you, Renee. Thank you.
So for folks to know, there are these school building mm-hmm. scores. There are programmatic scores, there are capacity and utilization scores, and I think there's some concern about the data that went into these scores and whether it's, you know, accurate data. What can you do to reassure people that this is indeed an accurate reflection of their school communities?
Absolutely. You may recall that a few years ago, the first kind of big seminal report that came out was the Parsons Report.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we did, because we knew some time had passed from the time of the Parsons Report until the present, we wanted to go back and take another look at every single school mm-hmm. building, every single school facility. So we worked with an external group to take a look. We took the time to then vet that data with assistant superintendents who supervise schools in the learning networks and with principals and building administrators.
So the principals got to look at this data and ensure that it was accurate?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We wanted to take several looks to really vet this multiple times because it's easy to make a mistake when you've got a lot of big data set. But when you look at those four categories, I want to be clear, the intent here was not to take data surrounding the building conditions and building utilization, and then to marry together what we call a vulnerability mm-hmm. score.
Yep.
What's unique about this this facilities master plan, unlike a lot of districts, we included a vulnerability score index because we wanted to look at, are there communities that had a disproportionate were disproportionately impacted mm-hmm. in 2012-13? Are there some parts of Philadelphia that have hyper segregation or hyper levels of poverty, entrenched poverty that's higher than other places? Are there parts of the city that have very high English language learner populations that require us to let's take another look? This is not just about numbers. But to the extent that there are those four scores you referenced, this is not a process where you just take four scores together, add them together, and divide by four, and then rank from top to bottom.
There's some discretion in there, is what you're saying.
There's some discretion in there in terms of hearing the lived experiences and stories of people who live in these communities. Mm-hmm. There's some discretion inherent in the process because what people tell us is very unique and in context that you don't always get from numbers. So it's one of the reasons why over the past 3.5 years, we've had a project team with some 30 diverse Philadelphians. We've had 9 advisory groups with more than 170 members, to include city council members, to faith leaders, to parents, to just grassroots organizations. We took all that feedback in together and said, okay, how do we solve this problem to be more efficient with how we get our limited resources, use our limited resources to drive high quality academic and extracurricular programs into all neighborhoods, knowing that there is no one right answer. But how do we take the best crack at this so that we can set us up to accelerate the improvements that are taking place in the school district? And that said, again, I'll just remind you, there's no one or right answer. But so there's no tight algorithm that if you just say, add these four together, divide by four, anything below this number,
right,
let's just modernize clothes or whatever.
I want to talk about racial disparities a little bit because, you know, reporting and analysis, they indicate that Black students are disproportionately represented in the closing schools compared with overall district demographics. And so I want you to respond to this, these numbers. And a lot of Black students were impacted, you know, the last time that there were closures. And so just sort of respond to the concerns that this will have a disproportionate impact on Black students. A lot of these neighborhoods where the schools are closing are dealing with issues of gentrification, and that this could be the thing that pushes some of those families away and out of those neighborhoods.
Let me answer that question, and if you would allow me to do so, not just as the school superintendent, but I want to speak as an African-American man in these United States. And a father of 3 African-American children. When I hear people say that there's a disproportionate impact on Black and brown communities, I think 3 things. Number one, the School District of Philadelphia is about 50% or so African-American. About 1/4 of our students are Latine, which means that 3/4 of the children are Black and brown children, and we'd add other groups in there. Any decisions we make will have an impact. That's one. Two, I think notwithstanding the significant progress we are making with test scores up, graduation rates up, dropout rates down more than half, and for the first time last year, the district enrollment grew, we see a vision for people of color, specifically African-American, Latinx, and other children, all children, to get significantly better. When I look at the data over the past decade, for example, when you look at how Black and brown children are performing in the nation's report card, we've gone from dead last pre-pandemic in 4th and 8th grade, some areas, particularly in math, among the big cities in the United States, to the top of the pack in terms of growth. There is no large urban peer district that has made more improvement in the past 4 years, 4 to 5 years, in 8th grade math on the nation's report card than the School District of Philadelphia, and it's not good enough. No district except Los Angeles Unified that has made more progress than we have. But when you look at our performance in the nation's 6th largest city, we can't be, I think we've already hurt Black and brown children by the fact that the majority are not proficient in math or reading. This plan will provide some additional high quality academic and extracurricular programs yeah. downstream to where we won't be satisfied until the lion's share of our children perform on grade level.
And Mr. Walling, I want you to speak to the pain point, though. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell mm-hmm. these families who say, like, we always take the hit to the gut, and explain why this painful transition will be worth it. And at the end of the day, you're saying that these children that have been neglected, who've had, are not proficient, that this is going to make it better.
All too often, communities of color bear the unfortunate brunt of change. And I don't say that tongue in cheek. I strongly believe and want to assure the public that this plan is intended over time to significantly improve access and opportunity for communities of color.
So we can clip this and you play can this clip back. It.
And yeah. let me give you a classic example.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the number of black and brown children in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who have zero chance of applying to some of the criteria-based schools, whether it's Carver, Palumbo, Masterman, you name it, Bowdoin, you just name it. Do you know that depending on what your zip code is in this city, you've got zero chance? Even if you're smart, you could be the brightest person in your class. But half the schools in our city don't offer algebra in the middle grades.
Which is a prerequisite.
Yeah. Which is a prerequisite yeah. to get into those schools. We're going to take this on with a fierce sense of urgency and get all schools access. Yeah. But I do know that that doesn't take away the short term
pain.
And so I it's not lost on me. And we want to sit and understand
yep.
and stand shoulder to shoulder with our families.
We are running short on time. I want to at least try to get in a couple more callers. Let's start with Sally from Northern Liberties. Sally, you're on the line. We are closing down the hour, but what is your question or comment?
Hi, I'm also a parent from Lubbo, like your first caller was. My primary question is, you have said in this plan that students are going to be going to schools that are performing at least as well as the school that they would be coming from if their school is closed, but that's actually not true for the students at Lubbo. Both Dunbar and Spring Garden have lower test scores in both categories, and Kearney has a lower test score in English. So I'm wondering how you're going to make good on that particular part of the plan.
Thank you, Sally.
From Northern
now,
Liberties.
I think I'm quoting you correctly. You said 90%
of 90%.
Students. So that means 10% will go to schools.
There's a 10% that is not at present the
and
case.
And why is that the case? Why would those? Why does that need to happen?
Well, as we looked at all the data, as we looked at, since there's no one straight algorithm, as we talked before, mm-hmm. we wanted to make sure at the end of the day that the overwhelming majority of kids would have a better opportunity yep. in the short term.
Yep. Let me bring in Mr. Shabazz from mm-hmm. West Philadelphia, who's on line three.
Yep.
You're on Studio 2. Quickly, if you could, your question or comment for the superintendent.
Yes. First of all, good afternoon to everyone.
Good afternoon.
My name is Fahmi Shabazz. I'm the parent of three students whose schools are being changed. Mm. My two sons that go to the workshop school will be combined with the school Overbrook,
yep.
which is not nearly as good as the workshop school. And Dr. Watlington, I'm quite sure that you can attest to that. As far as my third son, my youngest son, he's attending the Overbrook Elementary School,
yep.
the school that we call Family, because that school, I don't have a question, I have comments. But the Overbrook Elementary School has a 95% attendance rating. It has a 79% the building is used. 79% of the building is being used. We're partners with 12 different organizations in our community. Yeah. It's a community-based school. We have my wife and I personally pass out fruits and vegetables and meats to the families from Overbrook School every week.
Wow.
We pass out toys. We pass out clothes, coats for the kids. And the school does the same. That's the only school that my children have ever attended that the teachers know every student by name.
Wow.
Every student knows every teacher by name. Every teacher knows every parent. When we go to pick our children up in the afternoon, We don't have to go to the teacher and say, can you send out
And Mr. Shabazz, we only have a minute left in the show, but thank you so much for your comment.
I just have one more thing.
Go right ahead, real quick.
Dr. Watlington, I understand that you said you have three children that are in school. Are their schools being changed?
My three sons have graduated from high school. No, their schools are still the same schools intact when they went there. Let me be clear about that.
Thank you so much Mr. Shabazz from West Philadelphia. So Overbrook Elementary School, one of the schools that is poor to be closed. And then also real quick, that workshop school is the school that's going to be co-located inside Overbrook High School. It would still be the workshop school, if I understand that correctly.
That's correct.
Okay. Look, we're wrapping up here, but real quick, a lot of pushback on city council. Do you expect a city council to have a strong voice in which schools close and which schools don't? We only have about 20 seconds.
We absolutely expect the city council members to be very concerned about any changes that happen in their councilmatic district. And so this week and last week and next week, we'll continue to have meetings with both council president and individual members of council as appropriate. And we're listening to their feedback as well.
Yes.
Thank you so much for listening to our listeners' feedback today. That is Philadelphia School Superintendent Dr. Tony Watlington. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for having me today.
And thank you to Samad, Ms. Brooks from North Philadelphia, to Stephanie from West Philadelphia for calling in, and to everybody who wrote in your questions. We appreciate you listening and for, you know, submitting and talking to us in this conversation. Thanks so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, and Hazel Mae Bryan. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, and to Al Banks and Tina Calique, who engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.